This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm Nicola McLeod. This is Good Question PEI. I'm in Eastern PEI on a dirt road on my way to the McPhail Woods. The road trip today is courtesy of Ken Duran in New Glasgow. He asked me what the island government is doing to replenish the massive loss of trees caused by Fiona. And I figured the best way to get an answer to Ken's question is to head out to one of the scenes of that loss.
You've arrived at your destination.
My name is Gary Schneider. I'm the co-manager of the McPhail Woods Ecological Forestry Project. We're in the middle of our native plant nursery in Orwell, Prince Edward Island, on the Sir Andrew McPhail Homestead, the beautiful Sir Andrew McPhail Homestead. There's 110 acres of woods on this property, the McPhail Homestead. There's another 100 acres on the Lindsay property next door that we're looking after. So it's a big chunk of land. It's a dog's breakfast of things. There's everything from old field white spruce to lots of damage from Fiona to some old growth stands that have hemlock and some yellow birch in it.
Where were you the night of Fiona? Where were you when the storm was happening?
I was home, actually, listening to my house shake in Tea Hill.
I don't think a lot of us who were up through the night listening to the winds, fearing our roofs were about to come off based on the sound. We didn't really know what waking up to the next morning. What was going through your mind as you were hearing the high winds outside?
I knew it would be hard on the trees, but I did not expect it to be this bad. I did see a few places where the winds were so high and the woods were on top of a hill that they just got destroyed, didn't matter what was in them. For the most part, I knew it was Fiona was going to be cleaning out a lot of things that would have come down in the next few years. But again, it's heartbreaking to come down and see all of a sudden, you know, you're missing the trees along the side of your road.
What was it like the first time you came through this area where we're standing now?
This wasn't so bad. Coming down the road and seeing all the trees on the side and seeing, you know, trees that are like 40-year-old red oak that were smashed, not because they were weak, but because the trembling aspen and the white spruce around them fell over and smashed them down. I drove by those trees since 1991. We planted them first or second year that we were here. So they were friends, right?
It's a hard loss.
It is a hard loss. But it's a good example of what happens when the wrong trees are in the wrong places. So there's white spruce are very shallow rooted. They're on old agricultural sites, which have a plow pan. Usually the roots are very shallow on these species, as well as larch and things like that. The trees that came down were going to come down anyways, whether it was in Fiona or another storm or whatever. And they're probably trees that weren't supposed to be here, certainly not in those numbers. And so you can predict pretty easily that bad things are going to happen, because we're going to get more wind. We've always had lots of wind, but we're going to keep getting more, it seems like.
Even climate researchers here on the island say that these storms that we used to think of as being these like once in a century events, that they're starting to increase in frequency. So maybe not every year, but potentially every 50 years. But, you know, as we think about it, storms are still natural events. Mm-hmm. How much of a hand do we have to give nature to kind of bounce back after an event like this?
I think we can really look at science for a change and say what trees should be here if we're interested in healthy forests. If we're not, that's fine. If we're interested in plantations that someone's going to cut in 30, 40, 50 years, maybe those will work, maybe not. But at least that's somebody's choice. But if you want healthy forests, you don't put in at any time a single species, white spruce, larch, anything like that. And you don't put in all shallow-rooted species. It just doesn't make any sense at all. We've always looked at things like biodiversity, wildlife habitat. All the attributes and all the values that forests bring are what's important. So carbon storage, water retention, water cleaning, air cleaning, wildlife habitat, recreational opportunities, those are what you get back from the forest. Everything else is a byproduct, which is interesting because we usually think about forests as the wood being the most important thing. But this is a forestry professor who said, all the other things are important, and we have to have that as our prime directive. We have to keep those forests healthy because we get so much stuff from them. So we're not concerned so much that we can make money in 30 or 40, 50 years. We've just stopped treating our forests like corn crops.
Do you do any harvesting on the site here?
Yeah, we do a lot of harvesting, actually. And I burn wood and we build houses and do all kinds of stuff. I think using wood is a great thing. But the idea is that you have a healthy forest and that forest grows a little bit extra wood every year. And you take that interest. They refer to it as a bank account. You don't liquidate your bank account and hopefully it's going to miraculously grow again, right? And that's not always the case, and it certainly doesn't grow back always in the things that we think should be there. You know, I had this experience where we were doing tree plantings in Victoria Park with kids, and I saw a couple of little red maple seedlings popping up, and it was like, oh my God, this is exactly what's supposed to be happening. We can take this trauma and rebuild better forests, right? Things can come back.
Coming back to Ken's question, obviously, Gary, you can't answer on behalf of the provincial government.
I wish I could.
You're not Minister Stephen Myers, so you can't answer as to what government is doing to try to replant after Fiona, but I did get a chance to talk to Stephen Myers.
We've ramped up our tree seedlings, so I think we're at 1.3 million tree seedlings this year. That was something we're working on in advance of this. We built a new greenhouse and that kind of stuff. We're also working with watershed groups. We've given them some additional funding to help clean up some of the areas in the riparian zone and that type of thing, so we can at least clean up the damage and get a better idea of what needs to be done to repair it. And the other one is woodlot owners. We have a fund that we created for woodlot owners to help them clean up their woods road and some of their woodland so that they can get in and get a better idea. So 90% of it is owned privately here in Prince Edward Island.
How many trees does the department estimate were lost due to Fiona?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if we have a true estimate. I mean, it's probably more than the 1.3 million seedlings we're going to grow this year. But the other thing is, so forests are regenerative on their own. So I know even around my house, we're on a tree lot and we lost a lot of trees, but it's amazing how many of the small trees came up through already.
So those little saplings that like start to pop up.
Right.
Once the canopy's gone, it kind of provides that opportunity.
Yeah, so we lost a lot of softwood and we ended up with a whole stand of maple in behind our house now. So hopefully I live to see it grow.
The second part of the question was, will we see an effort to plant more storm-resistant trees? So is that part of the plan as you're replanting, like things that might weather better than what we lost in Fiona?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the discussion that's coming out of the forestry recommendations now is how do we adapt for climate change and what should we plant in its place? And should we be planting more hardwood or should our mixture be better? So, you know, we're looking at all avenues to make sure that what we do is going to be a forest that gets planted that we can count on for the next 40 or 50 years.
So like the minister said there, it can be hard to put a number on maybe how many trees, but the department says over 31,000 hectares of forest was affected by blowdown, and that ranges from as low as 2% in eastern Prince County or as high as about 29% along the North Shore. So Gary, what do you make of that and what the minister's saying there?
I'm sure he's right. I'm sure he's got numbers. It is not necessarily the case that when the forests were affected by Fiona, that it's actually done a lot of damage. So again, when I look in here, we've got lots of trees still left. We just don't have all those spruce that came down. I'm interested in thinking about forests being regenerative, because if you actually believe that, and it's certainly true, all our forests around here grew up after agriculture land we stopped farming it. So if it is regenerative, then why in the world would you be pounding in white spruce plantations or plantations that have one or two species of conifers? It doesn't make any sense from a science perspective. It doesn't make any sense from a biodiversity perspective or a wildlife perspective. You know, if I want to come in and plant rows of white spruce, that's totally fine. I don't think you should ask the public to pay for that. So we've actually encouraged a loss of biodiversity in our forests, because if we didn't plant those monocultures, they would be coming up with aspens and red maples and white birch and gray birch and, you know, pincherry and all kinds of stuff in there. I think we still have so much to learn, but our sort of fallback position is always to act like the Irvings in New Brunswick. We're going to keep putting in plantations and say we planted 1.3 million or whatever the number is, when really you should be looking and saying, how many forests have we helped on the road to becoming healthy. We're not going to make a young forest healthy right away, but certainly we can add species of trees and shrubs that will help biodiversity on that site, help wildlife on that site, and help future values for landowners.
It's kind of coming back to that question about what hand up we need to give nature in order to help it heal. Is there anything we can be doing, or do we just let it do its thing?
Well, I think the worst thing I can think of is to have somebody come in with a lot of taxpayers' money, take away all the wood that's fallen onto the ground, even though those soils may desperately need more organic matter and water holding capacity and nutrients, and then put in one or two species of conifers at, again, great public expense to do that, when you could take a small amount of that money, a tiny fraction really, and start adding in species that are missing from those sites. We're not talking about the 40 or 50 years that Minister Myers was talking about. We're talking about 200, 400, 450 years. That's what we're looking for here.
Even just walking around this site, I'm struck by how much it has changed since after the post-tropical storm. I walk into a trail and I try to go all the way through, but not 10 meters in. I'm standing here next to this massive pine tree that has snapped right in the middle and is now blocking the trail. Gary mentioned that trauma that people experienced after Fiona, and I'll admit, as an islander, I still feel some of that. But for me, at least, one thing that has really given me hope in the aftermath, I think a lot of people correct us when we say that the trees were damaged or that the forests were damaged by Fiona. Instead, a lot of folks have challenged me to reframe it as the forests are changed, that they're not the same as they were before, but they're still forests. They're capable of regenerating, and that what Fiona did is just a blip on the life cycle of hundreds of years of these living species. And I think that's something that can give all of us a little bit of hope as we move forward. Okay, to recap, the forests all across Prince Edward Island look very different after Fiona than they did before. But Gary says many of those trees that came down, they may have come down anyway, and it's probably because they weren't supposed to be there. And that in the aftermath of Fiona, we actually have a chance to build more biodiverse and resilient woodlots. I've met a lot of people over the past year and a half whose lives were changed by Fiona in a variety of ways. One of those people was Bob Boyle, who owns the Brackley Drive-In. That business was really reliant on trees on the property because they were acting as this natural sound and light barrier between these screens, and then all of those trees blew down.
Kind of interesting, when I was down in Bermuda and ended up at a museum, and what they had listed is that cedar, a certain type of cedar that they have down in Bermuda that withstands the harshest conditions, as well as a tree that's called Australian Whispering Pine. So I'm going to look into that as well to see how that holds up. It was kind of interesting that it just popped right up, and I'm like, wow, that's exactly what we're looking for here on the island.
What do you think, Gary? Should we be looking outside of PEI for species that might be a little more hurricane resistant than maybe the native naturally occurring species we have here?
Well, I think we have lots of species here that will do well, and we don't use them very well. I worry a little bit that when we look at something else being another species being hardy somewhere, we don't really learn the lessons that I think we should have. I know the province and the feds were planting a lot of Norway spruce here, and they found that, you know, they would grow great for 20 years, and then all of a sudden they'd get insects, or they would get ice storms, and they'd snap the tops off the trees. So something that may look good in another climate, English oak is a great example. There's all kinds of English oak around the homestead here. In England, it's a fantastic tree, beautiful tree. Here, it's terrible. I've never seen one that looked really good. I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, that didn't look good because it's not really suited to our climate. So we can't really just pick out things and say, okay, well, that one's wind resistant, we'll bring it here. Well, it may not like dry soils or sand. There's all kinds of other things.
And you're doing a reforestation project in Victoria Park, or our management plan. How are you making decisions about what trees should go in there and how to manage that forest for the future?
That's a good question. We did a management plan for them. We'll treat this land as if it was our own. So it's nothing special. It's just what we do for any landowner. And the city was very receptive to what we talked about. We've done a lot of work there in the past, so we have a good relationship with them. And then we started putting in trees, shrubs, wildflowers, and ferns that were suitable to those conditions. So in the more open areas, we'd have to put in trees that needed more light. In the more shaded areas where there still was some tree cover, we could put in trees and shrubs and stuff that could tolerate that lack of, you know, direct sun. The forest wasn't in good shape there, and we're going to take all the wood that's leaning or, you know, down and make sure it's in contact with the ground so it starts to rot.
One of the concerns that you kind of hear islanders raise a lot in the aftermath of Fiona is all this deadwood that's on the ground. I think at the same time we were seeing these historic records of forest fires in other parts of North America, I think then people are looking around, they're seeing all this downed wood, and there's an inherent anxiety about what could maybe happen here. What would you say to folks who have that concern?
And I understand anxiety, and I understand people being worried about fire. Having a wildfire come through would terrify me. On the other hand, if you look at, again, the science, there's not much that says in this climate our woods burn a lot. So when you look at the woods that burned in Nova Scotia, they weren't really natural forests, right? They were forests that came up after a lot of damage that was done to them. Most of the stuff we work with, we try to get onto the ground right away. And once the wood's on the ground, it starts to absorb moisture, and wet wood is almost impossible to burn. I walked through Victoria Park because I know there were some complaints from people about, you know, not looking neat and that there was lots of wood on the ground, a potential fire. I actually walked through with it with one of the fire marshals from Charlottetown. And we talked about it and said, you know, you and I have both tried to burn wet wood in our stoves, right? And we know you have to boil the water off that to get it going. If you leave a big tangled forest with a lot of things standing and there is a fire somehow, that could burn for sure. The natural fire regime in this area is 500 to 800 years. So if there are no human interventions, that's how often the fires would burn. Now, climate change is going to change that. That'll probably reduce that number. But it's not an area that's prone to fires. Most of the fires here are from people burning brush or burning grass or anything else, you know, burning trash.
Last week on the podcast, we did an episode all about Anne of Green Gables. So kind of keeping in line with that, one of the other folks I met in this past year whose life was really changed by Fiona was David McNeil. He's a descendant of Lucy Maud Montgomery. He now manages the site of her home that was in Cavendish. And that site used to have all these big, beautiful poplar trees that Lucy Maud would have walked among and she wrote about in some of her work. There's only about 2 of those trees left now.
You know, really, it's like losing a piece of history. I've been involved in the property since 2002, and of course, you know every tree on the property. You kind of have your favorites, I guess, if there's such a thing. And to see some of the big trees that were so big and beautiful and covered so much of the property to be gone, it was really devastating, to be honest. Yeah, really, really kind of hurt, you know, to lose such beauty.
He was, of course, in that North Shore area that had that almost 29% blowdown rate. How often do you hear these stories about environmental grief from people after Fiona?
I experienced it myself. I mean, when I came down here for the first time and saw all the trees that were down along the roadway, it's heartbreaking, right? It's traumatic for people. I talked to a friend who said he couldn't go out and get his mail anymore without almost crying because the forests on both sides of his driveway were down. My heart goes out. I feel for people, and I really, you know, I like to hear that people like trees and are saddened by their loss. I think, you know, we're going to get better about what kind of trees we leave around places, right? There are trees that are more stable and there are forests that are more stable, and we need to start thinking that way.
Thank you so much for hosting me out here at McPhail in the Woods. Thanks for being here.
Okay, thank you.
You can send your questions to goodquestionpei@cbc.ca, and please follow the pod wherever you are listening. For Good Question PEI, I'm Nicola McLeod. I'm going to get out of the woods now, but I'll be back next week with another question. See ya!
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.